This is the Climb to Space.
Hello and welcome to the Decline to State Internet Radio Stream, the show in which we get together to discuss the ups and downs of life outside the Matrix. Decline to State is proud to bring you in a surprisingly few netcasts in which the hosts do not support acts of aggression against you. You can find us on the web at declinefm.com, where you will find a link to the live chat. The live chat is your go-to way to interact with other listeners or bring up points for discussion on the show. This is especially important today, because we are discussing a topic, a financial tool rather, that we don't seem to be able to get enough of here at Decline State. More on that in a moment. I am Ronald McPaul, your beacon of freedom in the heart of Silicon Valley, and I'm joined by my handsome co-casters, and I'll let them go around the horn and introduce themselves.
This is Eternal, your beacon of freedom from the on Imperial the City.
Rome on the Potomac, I saw that on Reddit recently.
Yeah, Imperial City.
Imperial City.
And this is Rotto here. Welcome to the show, guys.
So if this is a topic that you have had enough of already from listening to especially the earlier episodes of Decline to State, that's understandable. I'm going to say earmuffs now so that you have the opportunity to get out. There's no shame in it. You can count Dr. David Friedman among the ranks of people that don't want to talk Bitcoin with us anymore. It's not everyone's cup of tea. It's volatile. It's hard to predict. There's no guarantees. It's not everyone's bar of gold either, so to speak. But generally here at Decline Estate, not everybody, we're generally fascinated with it. So we throw it into conversation whenever possible. We hope that its uses will grow as well as our fortunes. So in the hopes of maybe getting some of this obsession out of our system, we're going full Bitcoin today. We're going to try to bring another one of our favorite firecracker Redditors to join us in the mayhem. And you know, today after the events in Cyprus, the price is up and over $50. I think it's a lot more. I'm not gonna let you guys chime in.
$65
oh
right now.
God, I just checked on the web and I didn't even believe it. And I thought, is that just the high? Is that a range? Anyways, we are no financial analysts. We are no. Don't use us for advice. Don't come banging at our door when your fortunes are lost. But I have to point out that we've been talking about this fervently since it was $8. Is that right, folks? Anyways, food for thought, single digits, yeah. Not too bad of a gain at this point. And we're going to see what happens. Is it possible? I can't wait. I know it might be a little while before you find out. Is it possible Krakor, one of our favorite Redditors, is going to be able to join us?
He's down there in the panel. I guess some mic checks because he came in late. So we'll get him on soon enough. But
gotcha. No rush.
I have just noticed something quite interesting. He is in a channel doing sound check, and the channel's name is Somalia. Who the fuck told him to go to Somalia?
I did. I actually sent him to Somalia. I didn't even tell him. I just put him there.
Why? He was being an anarcho-capitalist? Fucking anarcho-capitalists.
Seriously.
I don't know if you've noticed or appreciated why we did that, but a few weeks back, Eternal explained the impetus, and if someone is being too much of a statist or they, you know, something's not going the way it works, you just send them right on to Somalia, and we have a channel for it, so we can actually do that now.
Yep,
so we are making it happen. The events of today again too, and I try to avoid status news as much as myself, and maybe we can do a gloss over it just to kind of get a view for the archive listener where we kind of are in history today. I know there was a video by Stefan Molyneux recently talking about it, and in Cyprus, as they are wont to do, statists are going to state and they are trying to pilfer money. I think the most recent thing is that they are not taking money out of people's bank accounts, or not taking the money that the bank owes them, their IOUs, but they are putting the banks on hold so that there's no bank runs, because as of course we know from Great Depression history, a little bit of insecurity which threats of confiscation can do, that level of uncertainty can potentially instigate a bank run. So that makes sense that they would want to lock things down.
Well, it's completely understandable, right? If you are a depositor in a bank and you have only in all your life been led to believe that the money in the bank is yours, when it's not, it's actually an IOU that the bank owes you and nothing more, then especially in a fractional reserve system, then understandably, once you see that strangers are trying to fuck with your money, trying to steal your money, and this is theft, there's no other word, right? If I give you money and you tell me you're going to give me 90% back because some other guy unilaterally decided that you have to give him 10%, then that's theft. So if I feel like I'm going to be robbed, I am obviously going to take my money away from the people who are complicit in the robbery. That's just obvious. And that's exactly what we're witnessing right now. And so people have been banned, prohibited from getting their money, or at least making good on their IOUs that they have and going back home with their stuff. That's what's going on right now. The world is crazy.
And yeah, we can't, you know, especially with finance and economists, not even the best experts can draw a direct line of causation and correlation or connect those dots perfectly. But we are witnessing a pretty extreme jump in the price. I think there's some events in Spain, too. I don't know the specifics and difficulties there. I guess more, perhaps more statism. I want to say that just off without doing more research. But that's kind of the greatness of Bitcoin in a way, is we can kind of get an indicator of uncertainty in markets. And it's interesting to me that gold has always been that backstop, but it has limitations that a cryptocurrency can surmount. I mean, with gold is something that it has to sit in a safe, it has to be defended, it has to, you know, it's actual physical material. I mean,
they can steal it from you if somebody comes at gunpoint, and then, you know, they can steal it from you, and that's a huge disadvantage that gold has and Bitcoin does not, provided that you've done something reasonable with your Bitcoins, such as password it, right?
Or, you know, at least kept them on encrypted drives or something like that.
That's correct.
Of course, gold is hard to move. That's the hard part about it, is that, you know, you physically have to move, and, you know, while an ounce of gold doesn't weigh very much, in fact, it weighs 1 ounce. Oh, I'm good at science. And
Eureka!
We figured it out. So, an ounce of gold is how much money? It's about $1,600 right now.
$100 million dollars.
Yeah, I mean, it's a fair amount of weight if you're carrying around a significant amount of gold, which, you know, if you're keeping your retirement savings or something in gold, if you're really saving a lot of money there, you know, $250,000 of gold is, that's a fair amount of gold to keep around. It's kind of hard to hide that stuff if you're moving it around. It's not like you can slip it in your pocket and, you know, manage to slip into an airplane or something like that. If you're trying to get the heck out of the country.
And in these days, if you try to just even move about with large sums of money in that, you know, in gold or cash or something, and someone stops you, and that someone has a badge, they can and they will steal that stuff from you and then force you to sue them to get it back. So Bitcoin is clearly the winner in this competition right now. It's obvious.
Brett, are you saying the person with a badge is going to steal all your money?
Yeah.
Did I hear that right? Okay. Speaking of physically carrying money around and the weight of doing it, you know, I guess, Roto, in a lot of ways, you'd be a relative expert. I mean, you turned a lot of people in our group and our podcast onto our Bitcoin when it was a lot smaller. You encouraged me to subscribe there. You know, it gets brought up in our ANCAP too. But there, I think earlier on, as I followed it, and I'm no expert, is there was a physical implementation, or some people had made a little, you know, something that looked like a coin, something that looked like familiar as a quote-unquote currency. Because it's very hard for people to get their mind around a cryptocurrency or something that only exists up in the bits, and you have to remember a password and it could all just disappear one day and who knows what happened. To bring that, you know, I guess it might have been part of the idea to help some people make it real, to understand it as money, because, you know, money is something that has an underlying value, or which, you know, Bitcoin arguably doesn't really. That's kind of one of maybe a drawback. But what is there now? Is that still used, or are there still physical things you can hold?
Of course, yes. Cassatius or Cassatius, I don't know how it's pronounced, is still manufacturing the coins. And they're very pretty, actually. My girlfriend got me one for Christmas a while ago.
Well, jealous.
Like when Christmas, right? And it's very, very pretty. It's a pretty coin. And it has a private key in the back that is behind a hologram. With this, you peel the hologram and then you get to redeem the value of the coin. And then the coin is worth, let's say, for, like, you know, decoration purposes. Now, Cassatius, or Cassatius again, has manufactured one coin made out of solid gold. Solid 1 ounce Bitcoin coin that looks gorgeous.
And how much does an ounce weigh again? How many ounces?
An ounce weighs like 28 point something grams or 31 point something grams, if I recall correctly. Okay. I know science. Ha! So this, of course, just the coin, just the round, right, is $1,600. It's a lot of money. And if you carry it around and you get robbed, you get robbed or mugged at gunpoint, you're going to have problems because you're going to lose $1,600. However, that's not the point of the coin. The point is this coin is a 1,000 Bitcoin coin, and it actually does have 1,000 Bitcoins in its private key in its wallet, right? So the joke was that the coin was super overpriced. But at least you'd be able to redeem the gold value, but you'd lose like 40% of the value because back then, 1,000 bitcoins was less than $400, right? Except now the coin is worth $65,000 just in bitcoins. The value of the gold is but a microscopic fraction of what the coin is, right?
Oh my God, that's fascinating. Could you explain a little bit for myself and for the uninitiated a little bit of when you say there's the key and there's a hologram. You're saying that once that's peeled, that kind
like
of
a lotto ticket, right?
Oh yeah, one side peels and the other one unpeels. No, I'm kidding. So the way it works is like this: when you need to send or receive money, both people, both parties, need an address. This address is a very, very long prime number, and it's paired up with another prime number, which is secret only to you and to the other person. So each one has a pair. To say a key pair would not be inaccurate. So you reveal your public key to the other person, and the other person reveals his public key to you. When you've done that, and you send a transaction from one
so
of the public
like a,
addresses
I
to
I show
the,
you mine, you show me yours, step
kind,
up the process?
Kind of like that, yeah. You remember when you were a kid too, right?
Mm-hmm. Play a little doctor. All right, let's play doctor, right? I'll keep going.
All right, so if you show me yours, I'll show you mine, right? And the way it works is after you've shown me yours, I can send mine to yours, the contents of mine to yours, if you know what I mean, right? And when that happens, you are now in possession of the coins. And the way you know this is because you have the private key, which is secret. And the whole thing only works. You can only sign transactions sending money from your private key with your private key, right? So it's a way to reveal something about you that is not necessarily connected to you, but only you can, with this secret that you have, which is the very thing that is in the back of the coin that you peel off and then you sweep using some computer program. That is the thing that entitles you to spend those coins.
So that's the other piece of the puzzle. So there is the public key number, and you also need the private key to go with it. And the private key is the part that's behind that peeled, that holographic peel.
That's correct. That is correct.
Okay. So it doesn't necessarily incriminate if this you're using this for whatever purpose that the state doesn't allow. It doesn't necessarily tie it to one person. It lets the coin kind of be anonymous that way. But you do connect that key to that public number. That has to be done for it to be able to be spendable.
That is completely correct. Now, however, if you give the public key to someone, right, and that someone snitches on you giving that public key to someone else, then the person who just received your public key, the person who just profited from that snitching, can tell, especially if it knows, you know, what your name is, right, can tell how much money you have in your private key, because the balances of public keys are a matter of public record. That's the only way that the Bitcoin system can work.
And this is what happens a lot in the R Bitcoin thread of the people who like to look at data and be technical analysts and mine and just are fascinated with numbers generally, is you'll see posts of people saying, hey, look at this transaction, or this person made a series of $5,000 transactions if you convert it into terms that we can kind of digest in our brains, you know, what we purchase with day by day,
correct.
US dollars. Yeah, people are talking about, hey, look at this, what did this? And it kind of, in some ways, it creates a fun atmosphere for speculation, like, oh, Bitcoins are being used. I wonder what this is for. I wonder what's happening here.
Everybody loves to see the activity of these anonymous that move price swings that
happen. Can you say that again, Roto? You were just cutting in and out for a little.
Cut out a little bit there.
Oh, am I back okay?
Yeah, you're fine. You may have let go of your push to talk or something.
Oh, yeah. Probably the mouse is kind of crapping out on me. So
or the state was, you know, slipping in there and just messing with the bits.
Yeah, I think Eternal's explanation is more plausible.
All right, so that's what's up with the whole thing, right? Mind if you go on? I guess I interrupted something.
Oh, no, I'm just asking, you could repeat what you said previous to that, if you still remember it, because it was, you were cutting in and out.
Well, yeah, so everybody who loves Bitcoin loves, or at least in my experience, from what I've seen, loves to see the activity that happens on the Bitcoin network, especially when like big whales move 5, 10, 20,000 coins at once, and the immediate market price changes that happen right after that has happened, right? So that's a matter for people to be excited about. And it's also a matter for people to worry because they don't know whether these big transactions are going to have a personal effect on them if they're holding coins.
And a lot of the way you interpret this, I suppose, you know, and if you are interpreting it again, it's probably because you have a, you know, you're an aficionado like Roto is, and like I, in Eternal R to some degree, you like to see what's happening. It seems like if you're kind of a negative person, or you're cynical, or you're a conspiracy theorist, you're going to think that, okay, this is somebody's finally selling it all off. Like, this is some of the things you say. People are going to get rid of it, and then, you know, someone finally is going to be left holding the hot potato. That's the fear, because, again, these are different from gold. The drawback would be than some other forms of current or money or forms of exchange of currency. I guess it's not technically money. Is that it doesn't have an intrinsic value. So once its usefulness as an exchange commodity or tool is exhausted, there's not much use for it. So you don't want to be. I mean, you want to have it when it goes up. You want to convert it into things. You want it to make your life better. I mean, that's what a currency does. But eventually, when it hits that 21 million, or you can't divide it anymore, or there's a better cryptocurrency, or the state cracks down in it, or it gets decoded and everyone hacks it, which I don't really expect with the supercomputer. But you know, that's the fear. That's what the negative person is doing, and the positive person is like, hey, this is going to go up, and it's going to destroy all these governments. And that's what these sellings are. People are using it to make real things happen.
Well, go ahead.
Go ahead. I was going to suggest that at this point, change up gears a bit and bring our guest on, because he's been waiting for a little bit. And I want to hear what he has to say, which is basically how to purchase groceries with Bitcoin is, you know, the article that he posted on our Bitcoin a while back. And we'll leave a link to the NCAP boards as well.
Let the man talk, man.
So we're going to bring on our good friend Cracker here. And Cracker, welcome to the show.
Hey guys, how's it going?
Oh, you're a little quiet. Can you turn yourself up a little bit here?
Cracker, it's been a long time coming. Excited. For people that don't know, who aren't avid Redditors, I think he might be trying to increase his mic a little bit to do it. Cracker is one of those brave scientists. I think he does research in biology field Redditors, and he gets quite feisty. I think Eternal and Roto and myself all from time to time will go out and rage and do some comment posts, and Cracker can definitely hold his own in that same vein. So he's real fun. He fights a good fight.
Okay, how's this now?
Oh,
there it
much
is.
Better. There
okay,
we are.
Perfect.
All right, yeah, so you want to explain for our listeners and everybody who has not seen your post as to how you went about buying groceries with Bitcoin, which is, I'll preface by saying, one of the biggest criticisms of Bitcoin is, of course, that you can't buy things with it. We all know that you can buy something like an illegal drugs through the Silk Road. There are some gambling sites like Satoshi Dice or Steals with Clubs. It's great for person-to-person transfers. It's way better than any Western Union or PayPal kind of thing. It's good for international stuff. And you can get some things with it, like Reddit Gold, for instance, or WordPress accepts Bitcoins. There's a few other places that are starting to accept Bitcoins, but by and large, the everyday stuff that we purchase, like groceries, clothes, gas, that kind of stuff, can't buy it with Bitcoins yet. So being able to bridge that gap and actually find a way to buy your everyday stuff with Bitcoins, that's really important to making it usable as more than a niche currency. So Cracker, take it away.
Yeah, exactly. So the big problem with Bitcoin right now is that there are relatively few merchants who accept it. And so, like, you might get your Bitcoins, but you can only buy, like, specific things. And, like, 6 months ago, you could only buy cupcakes in San Francisco or, like, alpaca socks or whatever. It's getting larger, the number of merchants that accept it, but it's, you know, there are a lot of mainstream things that you can't buy yet. So
Rutto is actually the one who sells those alpaca socks.
Oh, is he really? I didn't know that.
No, just joking. But I just think of South America, and Rutto kind of just happens to get associated with all of it because as our resident South American.
So there's a startup company called Bitspends.net that decided that they're going to base their business model on accepting Bitcoins and buying basically anything that you can order on the internet for you. And they act as essentially a payment processor.
And again, this is bitspends.net?
Bitspend.net, yes.
Bitspend in the singular, okay. So bitspend.net, okay.
And so they'll take an order form from you. You give them a list of URLs that describe the products that you want to purchase. Like you send them your Bitcoins, they order it for you using dollars or whatever. I think they performed my purchase with PayPal, ironically. And then they'll specify your shipping address when they order it, and it comes to your door. So that's what I did. There's this website called My Web Grocer that services grocery stores all across the country, and there's one. There's one grocery store just a couple blocks away that uses this website. And so I can order my groceries online using that website. And since I can order it on the website, I can also tell Bitspend to order it for me. And so that's what I did. There's like a $40 minimum order on my web grocer. And so I bought like, you know, $45 worth of groceries with 1.2 Bitcoins. And you know, they're still really new. They're only about 2 weeks old, 3 weeks old maybe. And so they're still working out a whole bunch of, you know, growing pains, early startup issues.
They being Bitspend, right?
Yeah, Bitspend, right. But like with my interactions with them, it seems like they've got a really excellent customer service philosophy and drive. You know, I had plenty of communication with the people at Bitspend, trying to work out issues, and they're still ironing things out. It sounds like currently the process they use is very hands on, and you know, it's like one person clicking links and copy pasting URLs and stuff like that, rather than some automated system. But it sounds like they're working on that.
That's an interesting system, and it's good to see the emergence of some newcomers into that market. Obviously, they're taking a big step and kind of feeling the way through how to do this and then what the best way to do this is.
Well, I find that very interesting. Even though the process that you describe is manual, there's absolutely no reason why it wouldn't be automated in the future, and I presume that's what's going to happen. What I'm wondering is what's going to happen to this business when they start, you know, making a lot of money, like when it starts actually going well. They'll become a target, right?
Well, when you say they'll become a target, that could be construed two ways. One, they're a target for the market, which is to say competition can emerge. And definitely, you know, if they're making a ton of money and there's problems with their service, competitors will come in and probably cut their profit margins. And
I'm fine with that. Yeah, I'm fine with that.
Yeah, that's a good kind of targeting. I want to see that. But it is something that, you know, will probably happen. Likewise, you know, there's the targeting of, well, they're operating basically as a sort of Bitcoin for cash exchanger. And as we'll talk about in a few minutes here, there's some problems legally with that if you're operating in the United States, which it looks like these guys do.
Correct. And we'll talk about that shortly.
So what's interesting about these businesses is that there are a number of Bitcoin businesses right now that are essentially doomed to failure. Once their business model is such that once Bitcoin adoption becomes very widespread, that business model will have no place in the market anymore. So like once my grocery store accepts Bitcoin directly, I don't have to go through Bitspend anymore. They'll be obsolete. And so if I don't know if you've heard of this guy, Roger Ver. He's the guy who runs, was it called bitcoinstore.com, that sells tons of electronics. He's talked about how his goal is essentially to make his business obsolete, that like so many current businesses will be wanting to accept Bitcoin that he just won't be able to compete with them anymore. And it's an interesting, you know, it's sort of like a temporary profit arbitrage system. And so I wonder if even by the time any legal issues come up with BitSpend, they might not have a place in the market anymore. It won't matter.
So yeah. Roger Ver is one of my personal heroes. He went against the government, and the government, of course, crushed him. But he didn't lose a single bit of his spirit, and he's continuing to plow ahead in the, you know, in what his thing, which is entrepreneurship, right? So he started this business, and I really wish his business doesn't become obsolete until he is rich and he can say fuck you to the people who fucked with him.
So what exactly did he do to piss off the state? What was his deal that they came after him for?
I am pretty sure that has to do with it has to do with taxes. I can't tell you exactly what it is, but if I recall correctly, he was sued multiple times, and he ended up losing because, you see, when you are the ultimate arbiter of justice, and the conflict is whether you owe them money or not, you can probably guess what the verdict is going to be, right?
Right, of course. And speaking of, you know, courts and arbiters and all that good stuff, one of the things I've talked to Toast about off the show over the past couple weeks that I wanted to get and I wanted to get pick your brains on and just kind of put out there for brain food for everybody. Bitcoin community, right? Delicious. In the Bitcoin community right now, it looks like one of the biggest problems is trust, which is to say, when you have a lot of new businesses come up and they're dealing with Bitcoins, well, a Bitcoin transaction is final. It's not reversible. It's not like I have, you know, I spend something with my Visa card, and if it turns out to be fraud or you know, they don't give me the product or just something totally gets botched, I can go call Visa and they say, oh, no problem. We'll just issue a chargeback. Money goes back to you. It's all good. There's nothing like that for Bitcoin yet. So Bitcoins is like, you better trust that you're getting what you're getting. And it's a very buyer's beware kind of market in that sense. So I feel like there's a huge room for growth in the manner of arbitrage, certification, dispute resolution. And this is the place where ANCAP philosophy is supreme. We've figured out all of this already. We know how to do everything with distributed systems. We understand how people can, through many transactions, work out reputation networks. I mean, all this stuff has already been worked out in theory. It just hasn't been put into place in practice yet. And I would love to see in the future, you know, some people stepping up and, you know, coming up with some services that reflect the anarcho-capitalist system of law and see how it works in the Bitcoin community.
Oh, in response to your question earlier, so I can tell you what Roger did now, if you're interested.
And this is the way that he went up against the government, as you phrased it, like directly?
Yes, that's correct. He was convicted for selling fireworks. He had a company called Pest Control Report. Actually, he had a company, he sold devices called Pest Control Report 2000, which were small firecrackers that would blow stuff up to scare like vermin, right? Rodents and stuff. And he mailed them. And then by mailing these things, he was convicted and sentenced to 10 months in prison and a fine of $2,000 and 3 years of essentially amounts to parole, basically. And so this is, I know, because a person posted this on the Bitcoin Talk forum, which, by the way, you can access by going to dramatalk.org. I'm not kidding about that. And a bunch of people came immediately out of the woodwork to support Roger, right? Like people saying, for example, from BitPay's Business Solutions says here, this is well known. We still support Roger 100% with his support of Bitcoin. And I found the post particularly offensive. Why are you talking about this? How does it matter? I'm also an ex-con, and so what? And the thing that just makes me smile is a guy who says, all this does is strengthen my association of ex-con with living in a police state. It no longer has any automatic negative connotation.
That's definitely true more and more these days, unfortunately.
Yeah. Do you know how much the explosives contain in terms of actual explosives?
Not very much at all.
1 gram. These are small firecrackers, right?
Dang.
Well, yeah, I've made a 150 gram explosive device myself in my old country, and we just blew it up for fun.
That's how you left.
It's very dangerous. You could get, you know, you could get killed.
Shove it on your back. Go over the border.
Peace out, bitches.
I use it as a propellant to get to America, right?
Yeah. So what is a gram? Is that like a popper? Is that one of those like snaky things that kind of swivels around? And
think of a teaspoon. That's 5 milliliters. A teaspoon.
That's 5 milliliters. Fireworks.
1/5 of a teaspoon of water is 1 gram. So it's really a small amount of explosive, right? Like a really tiny amount.
Okay. So you could put some of it in your South American cocaine for a little bit extra kick in the snort. Wow. Probably all can be ordered off Bitcoin.
Yep, probably.
While we still have Cracker on, I don't know if you were going to just engage internal, but
yeah, I wanted to get back to what I was saying before we tangented here about reputation networks. And actually, it's kind of funny that Rutter brought up the reputation networks with ex-cons there, because you could tell that the government's reputation network is flawed. It doesn't provide proper information because it's not subject to market forces. So, you know, that kind of ties in. I think that's amusing to see how the monopoly reputation network does not work. So yeah, a cracker. But regarding, you know, what you've done, which is, you know, go and just order regular goods with Bitcoins through it, this new startup company that, you know, is still getting their stuff worked out. I saw on your post that you made that there were some kinks, you know, that you had to call them up and make sure things worked right. And everything went great and the service was fantastic, but it didn't work as smoothly as one might expect a good consumer product to work. So,
and just to be clear, when Eternal says kinks, he's not referring to girls gone Bitcoin.
No,
referring to glitches in the system, in the matrix.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I guess my question for you would be, do you think that people would be more apt to go and try these things out if there was some level of, you know, dispute resolution, chargebacks, certifications, that kind of stuff regarding Bitcoin transactions?
So it's interesting. Like, I think how many businesses operate under the state system of
government,
there's like some significant hesitation before they put themselves out into the market, because, you know, anyone with like the smallest complaint about how they do something is going to cause massive amounts of problems for them, you know, like take them to court or I don't know. It seems like in the Bitcoin economy, there's a little bit less hesitation there. There are systems of reputation just sprouting up spontaneously. You know, people are developing an identity for themselves when they put themselves out into the economy that they can cash in on when someone has doubts about them. So, like, it was really interesting. Shortly after I bought my groceries with Bitspend, there was another, like, basically identical startup business to Bitspend. And if you just compare their Reddit post with Bitspend's Reddit post, you know, introducing themselves, Bitspend had had people answering questions from, like, the minute that they made their post, and they're answering everybody's concerns immediately. Whereas this other company, you know, it took, like, 6 or 7 hours before they started answering questions, and when they did, they didn't have a whole lot of answers to go on. And it seems like that kind of sunk their business right from the beginning. You know, people aren't looking to the state for solutions to that kind of thing. They realize that you can use reputation and ostracism and just your own, you know, follow your nose when you're trying to figure out who's trustworthy and who's not. And it seems to be working all right so far.
Yeah, I think that's partially true because of the way the Bitcoin community is centered around right now. It's generally small transactions. I don't think anybody's buying. I mean, has anybody bought like a car with Bitcoin or like these big several thousand dollar purchases, like a new couch or something? That stuff hasn't really happened on Bitcoin, has it? Usually been smaller purchases.
I know I've seen at least a few Craigslist ads advertising cars for Bitcoin. I can't confirm if any of those transactions actually happened. There's actually a Craigslist ad posted within the last couple of days advertising a $400,000 house in Canada. This guy wants like 6,000 Bitcoins for his house. So it sounds like people are like putting their big toe into the water when it comes to those huge transactions. And, you know, it's just like handfuls of people at a time. You know, it's not big at all, but like it's starting. The early adopters are trying to get it started.
Yeah, I mean, I would think that as the popularity of Bitcoin increases with regards to the large transactions, that the likelihood of a big target for thieves and fraudsters and stuff coming on the Bitcoin transactions would increase. Right now, it seems like the community itself is very observant as to if anybody is running a scam operation or something. It's like the level of consumer awareness in the Bitcoin community is far, 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 far beyond what you would see in the everyday, just, you know, take 100 people out of a random room. And I think that once we have more people using Bitcoin for larger or more, you know, integral transactions to their livelihood rather than just luxuries and the occasional, you know, black market good, that we'll see the need for these advanced reputation networks emerge. And I'm really kind of crossing my fingers and hoping that, you know, when, if somebody does come up with something that's really good, that they don't botch it. Because I think that, you know, the first comers to this market have a huge opportunity, and if they squander it, it's going to hurt Bitcoin as a whole by making it harder for the next people to come along and get people to willingly accept their service.
Well, I think I might disagree with you there. Like, it might hurt a little bit, but, you know, when you have these transactions happening in a market where people can try things and reject them if they don't work and try something else. I see a lot of robustness in how people approach the reputation problem. To borrow a phrase from Nassim Taleb, I actually think it's an anti-fragile system, that as mistakes happen, the reputation systems get stronger, because people know what goes wrong, and they know what to look for the next time they look for a reputation solution.
Could you explain the person you're quoting right there, or that kind of pithy statement you're referring to? Who's the, you said Nassim Taleb?
Yeah, so this guy Nassim Nicholas Taleb, he's a best-selling author. He's written Black Swan, Fooled by Randomness. What else? There's another one that he wrote a while ago. And his book is called Anti-Fragile. So he's a former options trader on Wall Street, and he's independently wealthy now, and he's just writing books and talking about philosophy. And so he has this concept called Anti-Fragile that refers to systems that get better as a result of volatility. So like the market is one of the biggest examples of that, where, you know, if someone tries something that people don't like, it's additional information that gets passed on to the next entrepreneurs in the market, and it strengthens further products.
Very interesting. And kind of what came to mind when, you know, and all you guys were talking about what some of the tricks of Bitcoins are and what the user base is like, is that we have people making these ironic statements like, they hope to put myself out of business. I hope to make Bitcoin so big that my company can't succeed. But that, you know, in the context of knowing how important a reputation is on the web or in a situation like that, I mean, even if you couldn't make money, say, you know, with Reddo's example, the Bitcoin store for selling electronics, you do have this reputation. There is value in that. That's one thing that's not necessarily an easy economic concept for people to get around, that, okay, you have this reputation. You could maybe be one of these intermediaries, maybe help this arbitration process, get in there somewhere, but, you know, there is value in that. I want to thank you on behalf of Decline Estate, Cracker, for A, being an awesome Redditor all around and person we love to always interact with, and B, for coming on and being so knowledgeable and talking about your excellent posts on r/Bitcoin and actually using Bitcoins for things that weren't drugs. I didn't know you could do that.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. I'm actually in the process of buying a GoPro camera from someone else on Reddit. We're going to use an online escrow service called BTC Row, I think is what it's called. And I'm going to buy that for like $250 worth of Bitcoin, and it's going to happen this week. So yeah, there are tons of things you can buy with Bitcoin. It's pretty cool.
I want to see what video comes out of that. And yeah, thanks again, and make sure to come on with us later. It's been a lot of fun, and you're I can speak for Cracker. I can brag about him. His depth of knowledge goes deep. Rutto Eternal, I think there was current in light of current events, I know we hinted on, or we're talking about Cyprus and things that were affecting the price of Bitcoins too, in addition to the actual real life examples or implementation and progression of different companies in Bitcoin. Is there any big picture stuff that you guys want to move in on?
Well, my big picture stuff would be FinCEN and its newly minted threats against Bitcoin users,
Boo.
Merchants,
Boo.
And fuzz holders.
And fuzz holders. People that have fuzzy microphones, there's a strong movement against them. Is that correct?
I understand. Yes, I completely agree. So here's the deal. The Financial Crimes Enforcement Network, a bunch of idiots who are paid with stolen money.
And I know it's trivial, but which statist apparatus pays them money? Is this the US of A one?
This is the US of A.
Great. Okay.
So these guys have issued what they call guidance, but it's really threat, where they take existing laws, existing magical words that they've made up before.
I like how you recodify all the terminology.
I have to translate from statees to English, right?
Yeah, no, it helps. It helps. I mean, I think not. I mean, English is. I mean, you help a lot of people get a hold of things in English and translate things, and it's not your first language, so much appreciated the translation.
Thank you. So here's what these guys say, and you're going to laugh at this paragraph because this paragraph is titled "Currency versus Virtual Currency." This is what they say, not my words. FinCEN's regulations define currency, also referred to as, air quotes, real currency, that's actual air quotes, well, it's actually scare quotes in the text, as the coin and paper money of the United States or any other country that is blah, 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 legal tender. So any other currency that is not legal tender is not, according to them, not real. It's unreal. It's like contrasted and call it virtual, right? And so this guidance addresses convertible virtual currency, to say, you know, if you have some made-up currency like Monopoly bills, right, then that's virtual and we're going to say that...
Cutting out there for a second.
So we can't play Monopoly anymore?
I'm not sure. But for sure, I can tell you that these guys think that they can tell you how and why and what type of currency can you use in what manners. And if you don't do that, they will use the contents of this document as an argument to say why you are a bad, bad man that deserves to be in a cage.
But this is guidance. Don't we need guidance so we can live our lives? So we know what's happening?
That's another good example of what, you know, statees is, right? When they say guidance, they're saying, we're going to guide you to obey us, right? That's the guidance.
Follow the point of the gun.
Exactly. Just look at the point of the gun. Look at the point. Jump. You have to ask how high, jump again, right? That's the kind of thing that they do.
Yeah, and this probably is tied into what Eternal was saying before. I think he was talking about the general knowledge level of the average Bitcoin user, the person who's making exchanges with them, which makes sense. There's another barrier to entry. It's more complex. It requires learning the stuff that Rutto was telling us in the beginning, but there's also, and beyond a consumer knowledge, there's also a knowledge of kind of how money works, how econ works, how the state apparatuses work, and they kind of see the scheme a little bit, like, think, you know, the wheels behind make sense. And it's not to say that everybody who uses Bitcoins is of the same hive mind or has the same intents or has the same philosophical underpinnings or political views, not at all, but there's a higher level of understanding that seems to kind of lead in one direction that that Rutter refers to, you know, as given off by the way he redefines or translates these terms, of knowing that the there's a vested interest people that are giving the guidance have in extracting funds, and you know they're using tricks of language and logic to make that happen. But the Bitcoin user kind of is kind of sees that, has a little bit better understanding as an average buyer.
Correct. And I would believe it's no small part because for the longest time, Bitcoin has remained a thing that has not been tainted by these cocksuckers for a while, right? So here's what they do. Here's the meat of the document. This is where it starts. And this is how you know that they're planning to put their dirty little paws into it, right? They start by dividing people in three classes: user, exchanger, and administrator. Whereas the classes roughly map to people who use these virtual currencies. I'm going to call it Bitcoin because I'm not going to be using this propaganda virtual currencies term. The exchanger, which is supposed to be the person who exchanges one type of virtual currency for another virtual currency, like Bitcoin for Litecoin, for example, right? Or Bitcoin for dollars. And the administrator, the person who issues, if it's a centralized currency, because they later address centralized versus decentralized currency. In the case of centralized currencies, administrators would be the people who are minting the currency, right? So they recognize that in Bitcoin, without actually mentioning the word Bitcoin, they recognize that in decentralized currencies, there are no administrators per se. However, anyone who accepts and transmits a convertible virtual currency, that's number one, or number two, buys or sells convertible virtual currency for any reason, is a money transmitter under FinCEN's regulations. This is very, very clear. What they're saying there is, we are going to treat you as what we defined as a money transmitter, which requires a license, that is to say, requires permission from them for a lot of money that you have to give them. And you also have to be able to prove that you're not going to be aiding and abetting people in disobeying these idiots, right? And at the same time, it essentially means that if you go out, I mean, they've tried to spin this if it's not the case. Many people have tried to spin this as if it's not the case. But if you go out and you sell your Bitcoins for money, you are a money transmitter, right? So as long as you buy and sell stuff with Bitcoins and you just buying, for example, alpaca socks, right? Or cupcakes or whatever, you're not a money transmitter. But if you do buy dollars or sell Bitcoins for dollars or buy Bitcoins with dollars, you are a money transmitter. This is very, very important because what they're saying is only the people that we authorize are now allowed to do these things. Right?
Interesting. And Rutto, you said, what document is it that you're kind of decoding, or what speech or what kind of like form of state decree are you interpreting for us right now? You said the organization earlier.
Yeah, the code of the document is FIN2013G001.html. This appears to be their first guidance text, for 2013.
Okay.
You can Google it.
And there are, so this is some part of the US government, you know, one of its tentacles, and they are, would you think it's fair to say that by the terminology they use, you said there's administrators, there's like two other terms, but do you think those are kind of comparable with level of threat to the state? Do you think that kind of matches up with how much of a threat or concern you are?
I would say that they're classified not as to how much they threaten the state, but as to how easy it is to kneecap them, right? Because it's very, very difficult to kneecap 300 million people using Bitcoin. But it's very, very easy to kneecap the 10,000 people out there who are selling and buying Bitcoins for dollars, right? So it's easy. These are cowardly people who will use violence, overwhelming violence, to get you to do what they want, right?
So I used to sell Bitcoins, but then I took an arrow to the knee.
So it's very much easier to threaten a very tiny minority of the population by singling it out and then telling them either you obey us or you are going to be in prison, right? And there is prison for this crime, right? For being an unlicensed money transmitter, it's a felony.
It's like the equivalent of, you don't need to have your navy blockade the entire ocean, you just need to blockade the ports.
Exactly. That's what they're trying to do. And it doesn't only blockade people who sell and buy stuff, like, you know, they're an exchange. We could call it an exchange, but a person on the street can be an exchange. In Argentina, people are exchanging money on the street. There's exchangers, right, that come to your door with dollar bills so you can buy dollar bills for Argentinian pesos. Those people would be influenced by this. It's also people who operate what they call, in Bitcoin land, they call coin mixers, right? Coin mixer is a very interesting service. Say you have 10 Bitcoin to spend and someone else has 10 Bitcoins to spend, right? And a bunch of other people have more Bitcoins to spend. So you send to your to the mixer, you send some of your Bitcoins, and the mixer bounces it back to an address that nobody knows you have. That way, the money that people could have tracked you for before, remember when I said that, you know, you could be, if somebody associates your identity with your address, mm-hmm. they can figure out you have this money. The money that you had before goes into some kind of limbo where you still control it. It's just in a different wallet, at a different address. And it's a very nice way to protect yourself and to keep your, you know, your privacy. These services...
The term money laundering comes to mind, which is makes it sound negative, but effectively it's taking the not completely anonymous Bitcoin and making it anonymous or more anonymous,
correct.
Right?
Okay. Yeah, these guys would probably call this racketeering or money laundering, even though what's going on here is that the person who is trying to use the service or the person who is providing the service is actually doing something voluntary that the two people have engaged in a transaction for, right? There's nothing wrong with this. Now, mm-hmm. you may try to say that, yeah, this protects people who are terrorists and pederasts and stuff like that.
Well, that's the whole point, right? It's just we're all terrorists?
Well, yeah, I mean, of course. You're terrifying these people because these people might just lose their job, right? If people understand that they're just deluded, crazy, violent people, right?
Yeah. So, it's a U.S. government organization, but you were referring to Argentina and how it has an effect. What is the reach?
Let me finish with the idea. So the whole point is that if you're a mixer, you have this ability, right? Now, if you are in the U.S. and you run a mixer service, you need to get a money transmitter license because it's not just transmitting money from person to person that triggers their belief that you are guilty of something. It's also the case that if you're transmitting from location to location, so even if you bounce the money back to the same person with your coin mixer, they're going to still say, you are a money transmitter. We're going to put you in a cage because you don't have the paperwork, right? You don't have the papers that we gave you, so you are guilty of whatever is it that we made up. That eliminates, at least in the US, the possibility of running a privacy-enhancing service like a coin mixer. So I can expect very shortly that the blockchain, that info service that's called SendShared, will immediately be suspended, or if it's not suspended, then I have reason to believe that these guys are actually recording all the transactions and sending this information to the government, right?
Right. And to be specific, it's the transactions. If anybody is overweight, like $10,000, then it triggers the legislation for...
Nope, that's not true. That's only for money services businesses. Apparently for these guys, there's no limit for which you can be, say, you can be exempt of being a money transmitter. There's no monetary limit, right? There's
no reporting limit. It could be a smaller number than that, you're saying. It could be any value.
It can be $20, yeah.
Okay, so they can request a report on anything, basically. So you have to report everything.
Everything.
If you're a money transmitter. Yeah, that's really bad. I mean, it's bad before, but that's especially egregious.
You have to keep transactions on everything, and then they get... If you have a money transmitter permission for these guys to operate as a money transmitter, it comes with a couple of shackles. You are, in effect, the snitch for them. You have to tell them whatever they ask you for, right? So if somebody comes and uses your service and this person doesn't want to be known by the government who this person is, he wants to maintain his identity secret, and the government comes to you and says, you have to give me this information, you have to. Otherwise, you're going to have to close your doors.
So I think the biggest concern for this is, of course, as we were saying, you know, we have to at some point convert dollars into Bitcoin so you can get Bitcoins. You can't just unless you're a miner, you're not going to just get Bitcoins. And the days of easily mining are pretty much over unless you have specialized technology. So that was a decade ago. Now
or whenever the Bitcoin started out, you know, you could actually mine with your home computer. But nowadays, you're pretty much going to have to buy Bitcoins with dollars, assuming that you have dollars or whatever your currency is in your country if you're outside the U.S. And of course, this provides a serious problem, which is that, you know, as soon as you start moving money into Bitcoins, you pass through these, you know, gateways that are watched by the government, and at any point they could come and, you know, take your money, shut down the exchange, come after you for tax evasion or something, not reporting something, because I don't know what the rules are when you're buying Bitcoins and holding them and all that stuff. I'm sure there's capital gains to kick into play. And in any case, you know, even if you play by all the rules as if you, you know, just had it in a normal bank account and whatnot, but it's in Bitcoins instead, it defeats a large purpose for Bitcoin. It really defeats the purpose of it, which is to be apart from the government, to be something which cannot be controlled by, you know, a government or a centralized agency. So I think until we see the emergence of some sort of distributed cash for Bitcoins type service, which I know you were talking to me about two of them, I think, in the works before the show. Which ones are they again?
Repeat the question, please.
The distributed dollars for Bitcoin tools out there?
Open transactions. And Ripple. I wouldn't trust Ripple very much, though.
So really, open transactions is going to be this new thing that I guess people are working on.
Yeah.
I haven't checked it out yet. I'm going to do that at some point when I get off the show.
Oh,
I suggest
also,
you guys take a look at it as well.
I would recommend people to look into the Bitcoin OTC market in Freenode. It's technically complicated to use, but it provides you great security if you send your Bitcoins after you've gotten the money, right? Or vice versa. And also, I would recommend people to use local Bitcoins, which is a great resource. And anybody who wants to act as a money transmitter can use local Bitcoins today. And if you don't care, or you don't think you're going to be at risk for, you know, being called a money transmitter and then everybody looking horrified as you transform yourself from citizen into criminal, you should take a look at it. It's pretty cool.
And are we going to have an opportunity to post maybe a post show, I guess, post on the Decline FM website, maybe with a few of these links?
It would be cool, yeah. I'll try and cook up a small document explaining how to shaft a man. Actually, just how to buy and sell Bitcoins. That's what we care about.
Pretty much the same
Very
thing.
Good. Pretty much the same thing. It's about 2300 Eastern Standard Time and 2000 Pacific. So keep Obama in president, you know. He gave us a phone. He's going to modern cryptocurrency. You too can decline to state as we continue to feel all the feels on either Decline FM or Decline to State on iTunes. I'd like to remind you that Decline to State is still brought to you free of charge, as well as paid advertisement free. We hope to soon have a Bitcoin donation link for those interested in help keeping the servers running, the website developing, and the show going. A big thanks to all of our hosts, researchers, contributors, our listeners, and of course, Satoshi Nakamoto, whoever the hell he or she is. Decline to State is a group effort motivated by our love of liberty, as well as capitalist bow ties and free market monocles. Remember, when asked, always decline to state. This is Ron McPaul saying Bitcoin tips accepted.
This is Eternal. Have a good night, guys.
This is Roto. I hope you have a fantastic, nice, fantastic, fantastic day and a nice weekend. Have a great day, guys. Let me flow.